intellectually petty. Radio on your stereo. Don't compare us to anything. This a different scenario. We break records while we pushing the culture forward. Great music and big vibes right in that order. Intellectually petty. Radio on your stereo. Don't compare us to anything. This a different scenario. We break records while we pushing the culture forward. Great music and big vibes right in that order.
And you are now tuned into another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio, brought to you by M3S3 Clothing. Men make moves and suckers stand still. And as always, on the mighty, mighty, mighty Nerve DJs Radio Network. Come on, man. Yo, and shout out to Cesario, man. I just felt like taking it back a little bit with the intro. Very, very, very fire intro. Shout out to Cesario. Y'all already know, man, I only rock with legends around here. And today, oh boy, today is absolutely no exception. We got one of the giants of West Coast hip-hop, if not hip-hop in the universe. It's Aliens on Mars, still rocking Peace Treaty. Shout out to Cam, man. Definitely appreciate you, King. How you doing? How's your family doing?
Man, big jobs, intellectually petty. I'm petty today. we finna get our petty on.
Yo, man. So I've been going back and forth whether, you know, how I wanted to do the conversation, whether I wanted to just do hip hop, whether I wanted to talk about black folks. I'm a little ADHD, so I might be all over the place, but I definitely want to start about us. And when I say us, I mean black folks. Dr. Umar said that hip-hop has done more to damage the black community than the good it has produced. Agree or disagree?
100% disagree. 100% disagree, because it's not hip-hop that's doing the damage. It's the hijackers of hip-hop. So it's plenty of conscious, soulful, uplifting, positive, you know, revolutionary but gangster hip hop out there is just not getting no airplay. It's not getting no run. So that's not hip hop's fault. That's the people that hijack hip hop and force feed us, you know, monopolize what they want us to hear. So that's not hip hop. That's mainstream Satanism.
Okay, hijacking implies that we aren't complicit in that, and we are.
Well, not we. You can always find some slavers. You know what I'm saying? You can always find some sellouts or some Judases. So it's not we. It's a chosen few that's willing to sell they anus all the way out. You know what I'm saying? So that don't represent we. That represents that Judas faction, that Judas group.
The reason I say we is because even like the conscious rappers, I don't see the conscious rappers spreading other conscious rappers' music.
How would you see him doing that?
Like, okay, let's say, and I think D1 is phenomenal, and I can't say that I've seen everything that this man has posted, but from what I've seen, I haven't seen him post, I don't know what conscious rapper is out there, but I haven't seen him post somebody else's stuff. I've seen him post his own stuff, which you should, but at the same time, we got to promote the community as one, shouldn't we?
Yeah, but I think that's the younger generation. That's a generation below us that already feel like that we sold them out. They already feel like our generation been the gatekeepers that didn't put them on when we should have. So once they get the limelight, they're not really, you know, making us no priority. They feel like they carrying the baton and furthering on the fight, but they don't necessarily feel like they got to mention us. And I don't have a problem with it, you know. If they really doing the work, then they are mentioning me.
Okay, so as our generation, are they right?
Say that again.
Are they right about our generation that we've been gatekeepers and we ain't passing the baton and we ain't did our part?
Yeah. I mean, those are the ones that we are known, because that's what it's about. You know, hip hop, if it was just for the love and just for the culture, we wouldn't really necessarily be trying to get on the radio or television. We'd just be doing what we're doing because we love it. But once we start trying to get the bag and start trying to get, you know, airplay and all of that, then we go into their world. We go into the gatekeeper's world, you know, so can't have it both ways.
And you never gave a shit.
I gave a shit, but I learned real at an early age to not give a shit after I gave too much of a shit.
Was that before or after your first release?
After. I gave a shit on my first release, and then once I saw how things really work, and I saw that this was Emerald City and the Yellow Brick Road and the Wizard of Oz and all this was fake and smoke and mirrors and all that, then I learned not to give a shit no more.
Was that a byproduct of Cube?
Yeah. You know, I'm not saying that it was him, but it was my experience with him. And, you know, it was some personal disappointment, you know, concerning him personally also. But I learned the business from him, just like he learned brotherhood and, you know, military, you know, black brotherhood for me. Okay. So it was, you know, it was fair exchange. It wasn't no robbery. But once you get into this fame and influence and money world, you know, you become a different kind of target. You know what I'm saying? Everybody gonna say, once they get there, they're gonna say, well, I ain't your role model and I ain't this and I ain't that, because you don't really wanna accept the obligations and the duties that come with that. To whom much is given, much is required. And much is expected and much is required. So if you're talking tough and you inspiring these little youth to do our little tough active business, and you want to be the soundtrack for street activity, but then you don't want to take the accountability, you know, then I saw enough of that, and I'm like, no, this scared can I cuss?
Yeah,
it scared the shit out of me. So and scared the shit out of me because, you know, we from a different world. We think that, you know, I didn't know it was entertainment like that. I know the music is entertainment, but it was, you know, I thought we was really living what we were saying. So, you know, once I saw that it was more entertainment than really living it, then I had to back up.
Yo, speaking of Cube, when did you hear No Vaseline?
I was there. You
was there.
Yeah, that's me on the end of the record. That's saying you know, I was with Cube during the making of that album. I'm on that album.
What'd you think about No Vaseline, though? Did you think it would be as etherish as it was?
Oh yeah. Cube was the best. Like, to me, Cube was my favorite rapper. You know what I'm saying? You can't take nothing away from Cube. You know what I'm saying? He represented the sentiment and the voice and the slang of LA on rap. He was the ultimate to me. You know, you had Ice-T, you had King T, you had, you know, Toddy T, all these T, you had the vets, you know, but Cube to me was the top of the food chain when it comes to just the all around package, the voice, the attitude, all of that, the lyrics,
yeah,
you know, the slang. So
yeah. Cube was a motherfucker when he was in his bag.
Exactly.
Yo, King T's criminally underrated though.
Man, King T, like, he was so tight. You know, I thought, and this ain't no diss, I used to think he was from New York because, you know, he had the whole swag, he understood, but then, you know, he was rocking the khakis and the, you know, khaki suit and the low rider and all of that. So I once I really got with DJ Pooh, you know, I kind of really, you know, I heard, like, rest in peace, Mix Master Spade, because, you know, I first heard him on this Compton and Watts underground tapes, you know, hood tape, mixtapes or whatever. So that him and Toddy T and Mixmaster Ken, DJ Star, like, it was a hood thing. Like, you know, when dope was really cracking, so we wasn't even doing raps to make money. We was, you know, dudes was already making money and just was doing the rap thing as a hobby. We'll listen to Run DMC or LL or whatever, and then just put our own neighborhood. We'll transplant the words and the names that they were saying and do tailor-made mixtapes for different neighborhoods, different gangs, different ballers or whatever. So that's how West Coast, you know, gangster rap started.
If I remember correctly, you first 4 or 5 years in Inglewood and then moved to Watts?
Yeah, so I was born in East LA. I was born in Boyle Heights. at White Memorial Hospital. So I born in East LA, and my parents wasn't married. They was together, and it was an abusive relationship. So the first 3 or 4 years of my life, I was raised in a Inglewood family, 83rd and 7th Ave. So from there, I was like 3 or 4 years old. My pops was an LAPD, but he, you know, according to my mom's rest in peace, you know, he was abusive or whatever. And she almost killed me because she got his gun. They was fighting one day and she tried to shoot him and almost shot me in the head when I was in the bed. So from then on, you know, she packed us up and then we moved to Watts. And then my grandmother was, my mother is from Watts, right? She's from Watts. She's from 107. You know what I'm saying? She was born at home, and you know, on 107. So half of my family is, you know, is in Watts. The other half is in Willowbrook. You know, okay. It's not really Compton, but I went to a couple of Compton schools. But I grew up in Willowbrook. I grew up in Watts. But I spent most of my time in Compton and Willowbrook area. So coming up, you know what I'm saying, and seeing the best or the worst of both worlds, you know what I'm saying, I got involved in what everybody else get involved in. But at an early age, like, you know, I suffered a lot of, my family suffered a lot of deaths, you know what I'm saying, at an early age, my siblings when I was 6, 7 years old or whatever. So we was real traumatized. Like, we were smart, our children, but we was real traumatized. So I had a very mentally, emotionally, not just me, my whole siblings. It's only 3 of us left now. It's all boys. But that, you know, put me in a different mode, like seeing death and whatever at an early age and not understanding it, and then hearing my grandparents and my mama, that, you know, was trying to adopt Christianity and stuff like that. And so I'm hearing these hypnotic, I'm being programmed with God and Jesus, but then I'm hearing crying and death and prayers that's not working and all that. So when I did my thing or whatever in on the street level, it was different. You know, I was different, you know what I'm saying? But what really resonated with me right after high school was my older brother, Ruben Muhammad. Like, he went to the Navy.
Yeah.
You know, he was trying to find himself. You know, we didn't have no father figures. So he went to the Navy, and then he had got a scholarship after a few years. They gave him a scholarship to go to school, to go to college, to go to USC. So he started going to USC, and then during the USC, they had Black Student Union. And then, The Muslims, like the NOI, FOI, suit and bow tie, bean pie Muslims used to come up. They used to allow them on campus, and they had come up with the Final Call newspaper and the VHS tapes, videotapes of Minister Farrakhan, right? So my brother used to bring them home, right? And, you know, I was hard on the Muslim, like, this weird ass shit, man. Don't turn that shit off. I want to hear that. How the fuck a bean and a pie go together? And, you know what I'm saying? It's just, you know, I was just a hard head, but I still loved my brother and I respected him. He wasn't really on the street page, whatever, like I was. He was trying to find himself a different kind of way. But he used to play them tapes of Minister Farrakhan all night, you know what I'm saying? And we ain't got our own room. Everybody's, you know, we sleeping on the floor and shit on the couch or whatever. And I'd be complaining, but I'd be dreaming and hearing what the Minister Farrakhan was saying and was making sense. I wouldn't tell my brother that, but I was like, it, you know, making sense. But then I'm hearing him, you know, referring to Malcolm X, and then I'm hearing more about Malcolm X and how gangster that he was and how they was when it comes to the real enemy. If you know, so it, to make a long story short, you know, my brother showed me some demos. Like, you know, it was some demos that, you know, they did more than you know, they did more than sell papers and bean pies. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, okay, if I'm a push any hood, you know what I'm saying, from here on, it wasn't that simple and that fast. It was some real drama that happened or whatever. But every time something happened, my brother was the only one there. My homies were, you know, wasn't there. And you know, I told him, I saw the story before. If I, you know, if your Allah get me out of this, you know, I'll be with it. And it didn't just happen once. His Allah got me out of once, twice, three times. And okay, I'm finally with it. The last time was too much. And ever since then, I started studying. I spent the first few years trying to disprove and like, mm-hmm. you know, like that shit ain't real. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I couldn't disprove it. And so I submitted and I said, man, I'm gonna keep my word. And I've been pushing that ever since. So that's, you know, that was, I did most of my young soldier activity against a real enemy, put it that way.
I feel you on that. So I'm looking at the IG and I got three daughters, all grown. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, you hard as hell on the sisters, bro. Where's the male? What's the accountability from a male perspective for you in our community?
Yeah, if you know anything about me, then you know I started off as Mr. Peace Treaty. I started off as Mr. Gang Truce. I started off as Mr. Million Man March. For the last 30 years, if not more, all I've been doing is holding black males accountable. You know what I'm saying? But it don't turn into a misogynistic, controlling enemy, you hard or whatever, until you start holding black women accountable. Now I'm a problem, right? Now I'm a hater or something.
I mean, because it don't look balanced.
It wasn't balanced. It was all holding males accountable.
But you're talking about pre-social media. Now that we got social media, the general population doesn't see the history. They see the now.
Well, 75% of our people's problem, of our mental death, is with the female. It's with the black female. She's more, because she's more mentally dead, in a more mentally dead condition than we are, because she's been spared and spoiled. We've been the target since we got out of slavery. If you know anything about, not to get into religion or whatever, but just as a reference, it's a prophecy. Like, we're the children of Israel. We're the real descendants of 400 years of slavery. We're the real seed of Abraham. So we was enslaved for 400 years. And after that 400 years, you know, Moses and Aaron showed up. Two prophets that started teaching a new religion to the slaves and started waking the slaves up and turning the slaves' mind against the slave master. That Moses and Aaron is Elijah, Muhammad, and Farrakhan. They showed up at exactly the 400 year mark. And when Pharaoh, which is the United States white racist government and president and chief of staff and all that, once they saw that, then they said, come, let us deal wisely with them, ex-slaves, you know, for fear that in a time of war, they'll join on to an enemy of ours and come against us. That we see them multiplying. We see them being woke up by this Moses and Aaron characters. So the plan that they came up with is kill the males, spare and spoil the female. Kill the males, spare and spoil, mean gas up, isolate, and spare the women. Spoil them against their own man, right? So they was already, you know, destroyed along with us and raped and tortured along with us for the last 400 years. But it's a small window from the mid-60s or late 60s until right now. That small window of 45, 50 years, they've been spoiled like never before. They act like they never been in slavery. They act like the white man ain't never been their enemy. They act like we the enemy. They act like the black man is the one did that to them.
Okay, but if that their fault, is that our fault from a lack of leadership? Because we allowed crack, men, black men, by and large. It wasn't too many sisters selling crack. Not to say they weren't. By and large, we allow them to bring a substance into our community and we use it against each other.
That's no different than the Kennedys. What person that's supposed to be respected and politicians and all of that didn't start off with narcotics or crime? Like, why are we different if we forced to have to survive off of this because we got a powerful enemy that kidnapped us and destroyed us and physically chattel slavery, tortured us, raped us, you know what I'm saying, killed us, enslaved us, dehumanized us. So we didn't do this from no choice.
We did, bro. We didn't have crack in Black Wall Street.
We had drugs, and we always had drugs. As long as there was drugs and moonshine, we had it. Who told you Black Street, Wall Street was drug free?
I'm not saying that it was drug free, but we didn't allow it to take over our community either.
Well, nobody allowed nothing until Satan takes it over. Just like, that's the whole point. Like, if Satan is the guy, if these enemies was able to kidnap us, you know what I'm saying? If we was that strong and that wise or whatever, we would never got kidnapped in the first place, right? We never got enslaved in the first place, right?
Okay. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So how do you expect now a mentally dead slave to enforce some righteous law when we was awake in Africa, we couldn't stop the shit?
Okay. So what right now, what is our responsibility as Black men? How do we undo this?
Well, I'm an example. You know what I'm saying? Every member of the Nation of Islam is an example. Malcolm X is the one that we all say is our best leader and our example. And we know he started out as a pimp, as a hustler, as a dope dealer, dope seller. Some say that he was so allegedly homosexual. Like, so he was all of that, right? But now you call him your leader, your Black leader. So that's the best example that everybody recognizes. But why don't nobody follow the path, you know what I'm saying, and follow the example that he took? That's what I'm doing. That's where I'm at. I'm a product of that same path and that same information that turned Detroit Red into Malcolm X. Okay. And we see that it works. So why ain't the brother, why ain't you or any other, you know, over here with us? You know what I'm saying?
And do me, can you do me a small favor? Because my audio was fucking up a little bit because of our weather. I'm gonna have you go out and come right back in because I had to do something to your mic and I want to make sure it's clear.
Oh, so leave and come back.
Yeah. Yo, I've been having some issues with the audio, but our weather is pretty trash here today. So I want to make sure, because Cam is, you know, I want to make sure that we get the greatness that is Cam. Valid points. Beautiful conversation. Salute Ruben Muhammad. Salute Tay. You already know, man. That's my guy right there, Tay. All right, we got him back in right now. Hopefully.
One, two.
All right, yeah, we good.
Test, 1, 2.
All right. Yeah, we're gonna have a little whatchamacallit. I think I can fix that as far as the well, it's a little issues with a little scratching or something like that. Who's a hero to you?
What do you mean?
Like a hero. Like who is somebody that you, out of your lifetime? Matter of fact, I want two times in your life. Early on, before you found the Nation, right, who did you look up to? And who's a hero for you now, if you have one?
My mother. My mother is my first hero. Because, you know, that's who we come through, and that's who is God until we learn who God really is. So, you know, we learn that, you know, our mother's love is sincere, even though it might be tainted, it might be toxic, it might have poison in it. We still know real love when we feel it. So my mother's my first hero. And then once I got into the Nation, of course, is Minister Farrakhan.
Okay. You said NWA was like a McDonald's commercial to our youth. Right. At least I saw that on your IG.
Right.
What do you mean?
McDonald's don't make itself. You know what I'm saying? The McDonald's fries and burgers and shit don't make themselves, and they don't promote themselves. Right? So we know that it's not healthy. Everybody knows cigarettes is not healthy. Everybody know alcohol is not healthy. Everybody know McDonald's is not healthy. It just tastes good, smells good, or we think it makes us feel good temporarily, right? So that's what NWA turned out to be. It didn't start out that way. NWA started out more revolutionary, but once Jerry Heller and his community got a hold of it, they turned it into what they wanted to turn it into. They used it for their aims and purposes. Use NWA as their tool. So that's junk food. It turned into junk food. Whatever nutritional value that it had, they Bill Gates'd it. they GMO'd it.
Do you think that they actually they were intending to be revolutionary, or that was just like a happenstance?
I think it just happened that way because once they was informed, you know, that they was revolutionary, majority of them backed away from that. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, shouts out to Ren, salute to MC Ren, and salute to Cube. As far as I know, those was the only ones that was down to actually represent that revolutionary position with their music and their lifestyle.
It's hard to convince, and I've had this conversation numerous times, it's hard to convince young folks to be leaders for our community because they see what happened to the leaders and their families after those leaders was taken from us.
You mean righteous leaders? Because they
leaders. Righteous leaders. Yeah. Duly noted, righteous leaders.
Right.
You know, it doesn't appear that, you know, when someone, the government is going to make you a target. And if or when they take you off this planet, their families seem to be forgotten.
Well, that's if you don't have a God, you know, a real true and living God with you. That's the difference between the Moses and Aaron God and the Christian God that we've been believing in. The Christian God, the white Christian God, you know, is the one that leave you high and dry. But the black God, the black man's God that was given to us by the modern day Moses and Aaron, Elijah and Farrakhan, we don't get left high and dry. Our heroes are still respected and honored, and their families is honored and respected to this day. So our community don't get left out like that. They come and the enemy.
Malcolm's family struggled, didn't they?
Well, they, you know, if you know the history of Malcolm, Malcolm left the nation. You know what I'm saying? So why would the nation, you know, support somebody that defected or that denounced him?
Okay.
But while he was with the nation, he was untouchable. So obviously the real God was with him and the real, you know, real army was with him because nobody was able to touch him.
Man, this shit is killing me, man. I don't know why this is doing this.
Because Cam is on.
I would not doubt it, man.
No, COINTELPRO is real.
Oh, I believe that absolutely, man. I've noticed that after certain shows or during certain shows, I get issues, and there are certain shows where shit's just a beautiful, harmonious connection. You know, so I do apologize. I'll try to fix it afterwards.
I don't hear no problem on my end.
Oh, okay, good.
Hopefully it's just a shortage in one of your wires or something.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Why is porn such an issue?
Porn is too distracting. It's the satanic. It's a evil, wickedly wise behavioral science that, you know, the slave masters know that they put us in hell for so long, especially the male, that our only physical natural pleasure in this life is sex. So they're going to use sex as the weapon. Whatever black people find, you know, pleasure in or peace in or happiness or joy in, they make sure they use that as a weapon to kill us or to harm us or to poison us. So pornography is a distortion of the natural, divine, righteous pleasure that we're supposed to get from doing our duty and accomplishing, conquering obstacles or whatever. Sex is supposed to be a heavenly reward that only we get, that only we see. But if you're seeing somebody else having sex, that's just as bad as seeing, you know, some seeds come out somebody's anus or somebody, you know, changing a tampon and it's bloody or whatever. All of that's not for nobody else to see.
Ooh. Yeah, that's pretty disgusting, bro.
I mean, watching somebody else have sex is pretty disgusting. Who made it cool? Who made it like it's the thing to do? The slave masters, right? They the ones that say same sex marriage is cool and transitioning children is cool and all of that, right? They convinced our women especially. Love who you want to love. It's okay. Love who, no, it's never been okay. And you claim to be Christians, but you know what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. You know what happened to, you know, immoral bestiality, fornicators, and, you know, if you claim to believe in that. So who made it okay? Who made it fair seeming?
I mean, like, if when you read the Bible, like, God was pretty clear, and he kind of actually destroyed the whole planet because of things of that nature. And yeah, they, you know, Greece was wild, you know, to Sodom and Gomorrah, wild.
That's where they got it from. All of these things, black people, Africans never practiced that. We never practiced no homosexuality. We never practiced no.
That's not true.
That's not true. When do we practice homosexuality?
I looked it up a few years ago, and I cannot remember the name of the tribe, but there's actually
not true.
But because I know it's a tribe there that actually practices homosexuality as a culture.
And I said, when is that? Because if they did, it's because they was infected by white people. So prior to 6,000 years ago, white people has only been influencing our planet. They only been on our planet a little more than 6,000 years ago. Prior to 6,000 years ago, we never did none of this. When we got conquered and influenced by the Adamites, the Adamic race, the Caucasian, the white race, you know, we gave them power and dominion to rule according to their weak, wicked nature. So they infected the whole planet with what they get at.
So let me ask you this. Another 150 years, white people are numerically black people. Mm-hmm. How should we treat them?
They won't be here. You don't have to treat them no kind of way. They won't exist.
Oh, you think they're just going to completely just disappear?
Yeah, they're already doing that without being mated. Their birth rate is at zero. Their population growth is at zero. For everyone that's born, one dies. So combine that with now their women and their men want to interracial date with black people. That kills the white race. You know what I'm saying? So they're going to either die a natural death or unnatural death, but they can't survive no longer than was prophesied, which was 6,000 years. Genetically, biologically, they just can't do it.
Okay, so Israel versus Palestine.
Oh, I can't really talk about that.
Can't talk about that one?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, but give me the question. Maybe I can give you a...
I just wanted your thoughts on it.
Oh, well, I can't have no comments. We got strict instructions. You know, I don't know if you know that Minister Farrakhan and the nation have a $5 billion lawsuit against the Anti-Defamation League, you know, and the Simon Wiesenthal Center. This is the Zionist Jewish organization that been calling us anti-Semitic for the last 40 years. So that subject is directly related to why I can't speak on it.
Okay. All right. I know I had interviewed Student Minister Nuri Muhammad, I don't know, maybe a month ago, and same thing that I guess he was, you know, so I wasn't sure if that had lifted or not.
Nah, it's you're about to see some activity. Like they coming for us. So all of the stuff that you see right now, the distractions that you're seeing right now with Puffy and Will Smith and all this stuff, all of that is a diversion, distraction, because these Satans are being exposed like they never had before, and Minister Farrakhan is the one that's exposing them, and God is backing him up.
It's hard to believe that that the allegations against Diddy are a distraction because they seem so believable.
No, I'm not saying that whether it happened or didn't happen, but the fact that they're pushing that into the media.
Okay.
The people that control the media are choosing to do that now. You know what I'm saying? Like, why all of a sudden that they gonna do right up until Thanksgiving that if y'all got any sexual allegations, y'all gotta hurry up and get them in right now? Like, why would they do that out of all the years that, you know, this been going on?
Okay. And do me a favor, if you're out there and you tuned in and I see several people are, let me know if the audio is too bad for you, and hopefully it's just me. Tay say it's pretty much just me. So you believe there's a war on our black celebrities? Male specifically?
Yeah, it's a war on black people, period. But the celebrities are the magicians. The celebrities are the influencers. Those are the people that this enemy has historically used to piper us into whatever direction they want us to go in. They're the ones that all of the terrible images of black people, coons, buffoons, prostitutes, gangsters, pimps, all of that was promoted by these same people, these small hats that control the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. Even pornography, Pornhub is owned by a Jewish rabbi. You
know really? Saying?
Oh yeah, Pornhub, right? So if they're really the people of God and really following the commandments of Moses, the righteous commandments, if you know anything about the laws of Moses, it's telling you the consequences of pornography or fornication or adultery or two men laying down together or two females. Like, so these people are claiming to be, you know, Jewish, right? But they're the ones that they gave the world the most terrible image of black people, the real Jews in history.
That was my next question. So black people are the real Jews.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the definition of Semitic, I don't know if y'all know, you know, they accuse us of being anti-Semitic, but the definition of the word Semitic means Afro-Asiatic languages. Afro-Asiatic languages. So languages don't make themselves. If it's an Afro-Asiatic language, that means the Afro-Asiatic people is who created it and who's speaking. That's literally the definition of Semitic, Afro-Asiatic. So how can we be anti-Semitic unless somebody made us hate ourselves and made us be anti ourselves? So that's where Crips and Bloods and hoes and niggas and, you know what I'm saying, we've been made anti-Semitic against our own black self, our black Semitic selves, by the real anti-Semites.
Okay, so break down the black husband gang for me. Right. Why you start that?
Because that is the foundation, like you said earlier. That's really the foundation. Even though you may feel like others may feel like I'm real harsh on women, on our
you family. Are, bro.
Well, I'm firm. I'm not harsh. Their actions is way more harsh than my words.
Okay,
you know what I'm saying. So somebody got to be firm. If you believe in God or Christianity or whatever, you already know that Adam got accused of being a punk. We saying that this whole shit is his fault because he didn't check his woman. So now when men get to checking their women for doing some shit that would curse us all, apparently, you know what I'm saying? Now we're harsh, right? So you okay. can't say that. That, well, the men ain't what they supposed to be and all of that. Well, as soon as we try to put the natural authority and law down and protect, you know, what's valuable, you say you're too controlling. Well, you can't be protected if I can't control it. I can't protect what I can't control. I can't even respect who I can't control. You can't protect your children. Your children want to run out in the street when trucks and shit is coming. You know what I'm saying? How you going to protect them you can't control?
That's a fair point, but I don't. I guess it's the terminology that, and I don't know if that's an excuse on my part or not. But like I know
words are too rough for adults.
I mean, because for me personally, I don't. How you come at me makes just as much difference as what you're saying, because if you're coming at me sideways, I'm not listening to what you're saying.
But you're not a woman. You're not naturally under the authority of a man. So it's not how I'm coming at you. I don't talk to men like this. Men is not the ones that's naturally supposed to submit to me. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Women are. Okay. Women is the one that need our protection. We don't need their protection. So if you claim that you're the most unrespected and unprotected, well, you're the most out of control. So you can't be protected. You got to do something to earn this protection.
I saw a sister, she made a video, and I'm paraphrasing this video, but basically what she was saying was, okay, it's women out here complaining about men not being protectors. And she said, my husband is not to protect women. My husband is to protect his one man. He's not about to protect you in some random scenario and put his life at risk or possibly be killed so that his wife and children no longer have their protector and provider. He's going to do that for me. If you got an issue with that, go get your own protector and provider. Stop complaining and saying, I don't mind being an independent woman, because you obviously do. She right or wrong?
She's absolutely right. But the man, you don't tell the man who he going to protect and who he ain't going to protect. You know what I'm saying? He absolutely is going to protect you first and foremost on all occasions, but you can't tell him who else he ain't going to protect. You can't tell me what my duty is. So if it's at my discretion that I signed up or I believe I need to try to help or protect to the best of my ability all black women, then that's something that you're just going to have to deal with. But I got to use my own discernment like she's saying. Like, if I see you out here hoeing or tripping or in niggas' faces and spitting on niggas and threatening them and you slap a nigga or whatever, then I can't protect you like that. You out of control. The best I can do is try to intervene, and that's a form of protection. The nigga might break something or really knock something out or knock you out. I can try to protect you that way, but if you out of control, like, you out of protection.
So, as a husband, say I'm at the store. Mm-hmm. I see a dude beating up his old lady. Mm-hmm. Am I doing my wife a disservice by intervening?
Not at all. Because if you see your brother and sister as yourself, you know, if we got that it's all about me and mine mentality, that's why we ain't getting nowhere. Like, it used to take a village. We didn't used to have to call no white police. We policed ourselves. Right? So if we scared of our people or we don't love our people enough to go check something or try to stop something, then we're not qualified to even say that we black or whatever. You know what I'm saying? We out for self. We some unicorn rainbow individual or something. But if you claim to be black,
okay. So gangs, good or bad for our community?
It depends on what they're doing. Gangs is just a group of people. So what is your definition of a gang?
Crips and Bloods, GDs, Vice Lords. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about. Good or bad for our community?
Great for our community. They just need to be directed in the right direction. Those are warriors.
You know, I'm not talking about the potential. I'm talking about the actuality.
The actuality, because they still living on a principle of warrior, you know what I'm saying? They're not scared to kill. They're not scared to die. There's value in that, right? So same way that our, you know, the propaganda machine makes us feel like we're heroes if we go join the white man's Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines. That could be Blood, Crip, GD, and BD, right? So we get turned into killers, you know what I'm saying? We get sent over somebody else's territory and land and get to genocide, you know what I'm saying, killing their people, mm-hmm. and we get called heroes when we do it for white folks, but when we do it here to each other or whatever, it's bad for our community.
Will we be able to fix that?
Yeah, it's being fixed. Like, you know, I'm my career started with a song called Peace Treaty, right? So that's proof that, you know,
but it didn't work.
It did work. What do you mean?
It worked briefly.
What is briefly? You don't live forever.
No, you don't live forever. But it started in your lifetime and it ended in your lifetime, correct?
It didn't end.
It's still going.
It ended for whoever it ended for. That's just like saying the Million Man March didn't work. The Million Man March did work. So you can't control, you can't force somebody else to do something. All you can do, all you're responsible for is the example, delivering the message clearly and living the example yourself. Whatever you do once you get that message and that example and that, you know, that's on you. Everybody is held pledged for what they choose to do. Our job is to deliver the message and be the example. The Nation of Islam is an example of unity. It's not individuals. It's a nation that proves that this unity works. It proves that this information is accurate. It proves that no other organization or information was as successful in bringing black men from hell to brotherly, heavenly brotherhood. No other organization, no other information.
Okay,
you don't have to choose to be a part of it.
You brought up the Million Man March and you said it worked.
Right.
How?
Just like I said, showing an example, example.
So
what is your definition of worked?
I don't know. I think that initially,
because work means somebody has to choose. Like no, nothing. That's just like saying, did God work with Eve? You know, he created Eve, right, and gave her instructions on what not to do. She couldn't say, well, you wasn't good enough, or, you know, you molested me or raped me, or you didn't give me good enough instructions or whatever. No, she decided I'm going to do the opposite of what he want me to do. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, but a little bit, I think, for me was maybe too hopeful.
What? What's too hopeful?
Too hopeful is... A million black people come together harmoniously, which happened.
That means it was successful. That means it worked because it was 2 million. It was 2 million black men of America. That's bigger than any standing army in America, right? These are the descendants of slaves that they feared. This is why they sent their whole COINTELPRO, their whole satanic pharaoh plan to destroy us so that this would never happen. And it happened. So that affected every black man and every black family that was there. How it affected them and what did they decide to do with it and how they decided to express it and demonstrate how positively that affected them, that's everybody's personal business. But the fact that we all agreed to come together, we thought we was going to die. We thought it was going to be a revolution. We thought we wasn't going to leave. We was ready to die right there.
And that I thought that it was going to change neighborhoods and change the trajectory.
It absolutely did. Crime is down. That's you're not doing no research.
Okay.
Homicide and crime and violent crime, gang crime, all of that has been down ever since.
Huh.
Yeah. Adoption, marriage, family, you know, family structure, family unit, men being, you know, present in their children's lives, all have went up since then. What? Why you ain't never heard them stats?
Exactly. That was my question. The part about black men being the most involved in their lives, I knew that when I looked that one up myself. But I didn't know about the other stuff.
Is it supposed to come to your lap or are you supposed to go search it?
I would think that the nation would be trumpeting that.
Well, if you know the social media done censored and canceled and shadow banned every prominent member of the Nation of Islam, how would you think you're going to get that from the Nation of Islam?
Okay, you got that. That's a fair point right there, because I know I have personally experienced things, and I ain't nowhere near the level of greatness of the Nation.
You are the Nation. You are a member of the Nation. That's why they doing you like that.
Man, I'm just a regular nigga, man, with talk shit.
Oh, no, you not. Ain't no such thing.
Don't put that on me, man.
No, they already know that's who you are. Like, you can play humble if you want. The enemy is on your ass just like he on mine. Like it or not. The fact that you ain't Rainbow Sprinkles, the fact that you ain't Skittles, they on your ass.
No, I'm definitely not Skittles.
Well, they own you.
And I do. I try to make sure that there are certain things in our community that no matter who I have on, I always try to make sure I got a balance. I never wanted to be one of those. Okay, well, you know, I just got niggas. I got the salacious shit. I don't really care about the salacious shit. You know. I got to eat too, and my soul got to exist. I don't want to leave this planet, and my maker is looking at me sideways.
Right, all money ain't good money.
Oh man, have you? When you get to, I don't know if you believe in the pearly gates or what happens when you die.
I don't know, but what I do know is the pattern that we had to go through to get this far, right? And this don't have nothing to do with religion. And I love critical thinking. I love being taught by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Honorable Minister Farrakhan how to think critically, which is we all started out, even though we talking, we got technology and headphones and computer screens and teeth and bones. We all started out as microscopic sperm. This is not religion. This is facts. We started out as microscopic sperm in the testicles of our fathers. So we were so small that them two testicles was like planets. So only planet we knew about, only planet we cared about, where all of our population, all our family and homies and companions was all the mother sperms, male and female, X and Y sperms, was in our daddy's nuts, right? We didn't know there was a such thing as a vagina. We didn't know such thing as a womb. We didn't know such thing as nut. All what we was given the instinct and the body and the function to swim. We had a head, an arrowhead shape, and we swam, and that was our world, and we was happy. Our job was to master that reality. Not worry about where what you was before you was a sperm. Not worried about what you gonna be after you was sperm. Our job, our duty, and function is to master, to be the best sperm, to be the best swimmer as a sperm. That's why we talking, because we was the best swimmer out of 500 million. We was the best. So then once we got to the, you know, got shot out our daddy nuts, all the sperm, you know, the sperm planet is like. Job sperm, job and them died. Because for all intents and purposes, you did. You never coming back. You never going backwards.
Yeah.
So if you, so now once, we don't know, you know, because we feel like we did too. I don't know what it's like in this air. I never felt air before and shit. Then I'm going to some other environment. Okay, let me finish. A whole nother world, which is the vaginal tract. Now you swimming and, you know, your instinct tell you to keep going. And it tell you to swim hard some more, and you make it to this egg, and then you dissolve into the egg, and now you died. You really have died a sperm life. You'll never be a sperm again.
Yeah.
But then you became something else, which is the first cell of life, right? A zygote or whatever. So then, you know, you're a zygote. You got to master the zygote life. Then you become an embryo. You master the embryo. Then a fetus. And then you master the fetus. And then out of all that, this whole new world that you didn't know existed, which was called your mama's uterus or womb, or, you know, that starts convulsing and turning into a whole end of the world apocalyptic situation. And you think this is death, and it is. Now you're dying this embryo world. You're dying this womb world. You never go back into that world. Right. But then you don't know that this was a mother that you in, and you got brothers and sisters out here. Everything is prepared for you each step. You know what I'm saying? So if we following that pattern, it ain't got nothing to do with religion. It got to do with critically thinking, okay, well, the patterns tell me that master where you are. Don't worry about where you came from or where you going. If you master and be the best of where you are, you're going to ensure that whatever there is after this, you're going to have a seat there. You understand?
Yeah.
So.
But that leads me to this question, though. Because you said it's 100% the woman's responsibility for getting pregnant.
For getting pregnant, exactly.
How? If
because she's the only one who can get pregnant.
But we're the only ones that can get her pregnant.
If we're not raping her, then she can't get pregnant. If a woman is intelligent enough, because we are, we're intelligent enough to know, I don't got no problem smashing you because I know I'm not going to get pregnant. That's intelligent of a man. You know what I'm saying? You stupid as hell. If you know you get pregnant and you let me do this and I ain't committed to you, I ain't bought you no house, I don't got no security measures in place. If you get pregnant, you stupid as hell. Because I would never do that. You know what I'm saying? I would never do that shit.
I've had a bad baby mama. So I'm looking at that differently because a horrible baby mama is a responsibility that you don't want.
Right, but that's just you being, you know, irresponsible, right? But you're not the one, that's your conscience, though. Like, if y'all both agree that y'all are doing wrong, there's no honor and no code among sin, among wrongdoing. You can't hold me morally responsible for something that we both knew was immoral, that you my crimey. You finna snitch on me now? We crimeys. You know what I'm saying? You can't hold me responsible because you got caught with a pregnancy.
Okay, but we both got caught.
No, we didn't.
Am I not just as responsible for that birth as she is? Not for the pregnancy, but for the once that child is here, I am just as responsible for the welfare.
You're trying to make it a moral argument. It was already immoral. It was already irresponsible. You can't get holy because you got caught up. You can't get holy now. Like, keep it all away. We didn't agree to get married. Shit, we just smashed. And you knew you the only one could get pregnant. I'm a man. I would never do this if I was a woman. I would never teach my daughter to do what you letting me do. You the stupid one. So now it's my fault because, you know, life is hell for the black man. We live our whole life. Everything we do is to try to get some ass. You know what I'm saying? And you know that. Y'all don't want to love all these luxuries and all that. We don't give a fuck about no luxury. We want ass. We want some ass. We want the pleasure of some ass.
Wait a minute. And did you say your brother's name was Ruben?
Yeah.
Is this your brother in the comments?
Well, I don't know.
Well, you probably can't see. I'm sorry. Rhetorical question. I'm sorry. And Ruben, is this your little brother? I just need to know, man.
What's his name?
Ruben Muhammad.
Oh, yeah. That's probably my brother.
Salute to you, man. And thank you, you know, for being diligent and disciplined enough to not give up.
Yeah, that was my example. That was my inspiration and example. Anybody that appreciates whatever I'm doing, whatever my representation of the Nation of Islam, Minister Farrakhan, it came through my older brother, Ruben Muhammad. And he's a student minister of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. So he bought that life.
Yeah, because being a student minister is and I've seen, as much as I can, I guess.
You ain't coming in.
Well, you know what?
You ain't part of your brotherhood. You don't want to be no part of your brotherhood.
I don't know if I don't. I'm lazy, bro.
You can be lazy.
No, you can't.
I'm trying to.
You can't. Stop it. Stop it. No. Now you lying, bro.
No, you. Because we all lazy. We all falling short. So what your version of lazy might not even be lazy.
No, it's for real lazy. I'm not gonna lie to you.
Well, everybody got a place, man. Everybody got a place. It's a lazy place for you. I tell you what, though, man.
I went to Savior's Day.
Right.
I think a few years ago. Man, that's an experience, bro.
Yeah, beautiful, right?
Man, like I had never. Growing up, even though we had Mosque Number One, my area of Detroit didn't see much of the Nation at the time.
Right.
And you know, I had befriended the student minister Troy in Detroit.
Yeah.
And yo, man, like my best friend got a, you know, he's a pretty prominent attorney in the city. And him and his partner got us some tickets. Not partner like that, but partner law firm.
Yeah.
And yo, man, this was one of the most beautiful things. And I grew up in a city full of black people.
Right.
And I had never seen black people like these black people.
Yeah. And they're your people. These is your people. So this ain't no cult. This ain't no weird, like we something thinking that we something different than. We all come from the same place you come from. You know what I'm saying? We all been through the same thing. We just chose to do something better and different, which is discipline. We just chose discipline.
Yeah.
We still believe in Jesus. We still believe in the one God that all the prophets believe in. You know, we believe in all of that. It's just we actually live it. We actually practice self-discipline. That's the difference.
What you working on? What are you working to improve at?
Everything, but right now, more of patience. Trying to be patient with my people, even though I know that we don't have time left. You know, grace is basically over with. But I'm still trying to be patient in how I deal with them and how I tolerate certain things. Of course I want to, you know, clean my mouth up, clean my language up. It's just every area, man. I'm so dirty. I'm a dirty, dirty little dude, man. So
man, stop that shit, bro.
I'm just talking about compared to what I know I'm supposed to be compared to what I was, I'm super clean, but that's not enough. Once you really start getting clean, You never see yourself as clean. You see how dirty you still are. That's just like once you get a little knowledge, then you see, damn, I know now how much I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so you know, it's a nonstop, but it's beautiful because it's always unlimited progress. The joy of living is to be able to continually improve and see how you can improve. So I don't take somebody criticizing me as, you know, a diss. I'd be like, oh, okay, watch next time you see me. You know what I'm saying? I bet you I'm gonna have that took care of.
And you absolutely right, man. You don't age like Dracula.
You know what I'm saying? And I done had serious health illnesses and issues, like with my heart, with my kidney and liver, and like, you know, when I improve and get stricter on my diet, on my how to eat to live, about honorable Elijah Muhammad diet, it rejuvenates, it renews and restores me. It turned the clock back on my age. Like some pictures you'll see me in, you'll see I'm looking dry, like, you know, I might even have cancer or whatever, like, you know what I'm saying? But I start doing my fast and I get back on my diet and God bring my glow back, bring my muscles back, you know what I'm saying? So we examples out here, bro, like, because we sick just like everybody else.
I don't see it, man.
We just know what to do with it. We get sick, I should say. We get sick when we fall off and start getting lazy, like, you know, but then we know what to do about it. Our success is in righteous discipline. The more righteous we are, self-disciplined we are, the more healthy and safe we are.
That's some real shit right there, man. How the bar is still so fucking dope?
I mean, is what we talking about. Look, we get wiser, we get sharper. We're not supposed to deteriorate. So I know maybe the youth, maybe the teenagers ain't really trying to hear me, but our generation is the 90s generation is the real, you know, move the needle generation. Our generation is the hip hop generation that really moved the needle. So
yeah.
Our age is, it started out 30 is the new 20, then 40 is the new 20, then 50 is the new 20, and 60, it's our generation, right? So part of that is, of course, the knowledge of self, the Islam that permeates hip-hop, you know what I'm saying, that culture, that foundation. But then the music itself, you know what I'm saying, and the, like I said, the beat and the drum, that's a natural, original African, you know, element that keeps us youthful. It keeps us youthful. It keeps us in shape, either mentally or physically or both. So we're the hip hop generation. That's why we love it. And this apparently is a bigger religion than Christianity and Islam because it affects the whole planet, right?
At least it was, because some of this
well,
shit,
that's the man. Hijack. No, that's not hip hop. That's something else.
Yo, man, and shit hop. Shout out to Glasses, man, for the plug, man, for linking us up. But yo, we got to talking about Sexy Red, and I'm like, bro, she's Satan.
No, she not.
And that's the same thing that nigga said, and I'm like, bro, no, she's fucking Satan, man. I don't care what you say.
No, she's a tool of Satan. That's a little god. You know what I'm saying? Because wouldn't we used to say Malcolm X was Satan? Wasn't Malcolm Little Satan?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, but let you tell it though. 75% of our fuck ups is blamed on the woman. So she's saying,
No, it's not blamed on the woman. It's blamed on us. But okay. The problem is the woman, right?
Okay,
she's the one that gives birth to our children. So if we don't put a righteous discipline in control and get her under control, she's just going to breed a new generation of demons. You know what I'm saying? Because we ain't putting our righteous law down on it. So it's not quote unquote her fault. It's her fault when she knows better. Once we, you know, it's all of our fault. Until we know better, we're not expected to do better. But once we be righteous messengers and deliver the message and deliver the example and all of that, and now you still choose to do that, now it's your fault.
Okay. Did you drop something recently?
Yeah, I dropped a song called Positivity, a single called Positivity, and of course, like I said, I'm censored and shadow banned. But me and DJ Battlecat, got a whole album that we did, you know, a year or so ago, and I've just been dropping singles, and, you know, trying to just, you know, put feelers out. I'm not doing it for money. I'm doing it for what we used to do it for, which was inspiration, feel good music, influence, to influence our people, something that, especially our generation, that we can feel good about. It's not corny. It's not Will Smith. It's still street. It's grown. You know, it's, you can party to it. It's grown and sexy, jazzy, or whatever. But I'm trying to show just a natural grown-up progression that we supposed to. I can't rap about, and this ain't the no diss. Shit. Yeah, I can't. I'm not the gangster, the killer, and the dope dealer. I'm not a pimp. I'm not a gangbanger and shit at 54 years old. Like, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to be talking about that shit. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to be talking about what.
54?
Yeah, I'm 54 years old.
You look like your damn grandfather. Nigga like, oh, well, nigga, fix your diet, nigga.
You know what I'm saying? Out of you can live. Come on home, brother. Come on home, get these youth. Get your youth, man. Back.
Yo, and DJ Battle Cat, man, yo, that, yeah. You talking about underrated?
Oh, yeah.
Yo, oh, yeah. And shout out to Stan Shepherd, man. We see you, what you out there doing. You know, shout out to the Playmaker too.
Yeah,
you know, shout out, it's to my guy.
Yeah, all of my loved ones, and all of these are people that's been getting censored and whiteballed and shadow banned also. Yeah. So we all fighting against the machine. The machine is these people, you know, these small hat Zionists, you know, that.
Why not create our own internet though?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. Why not? Why don't we?
Because without us, this internet wouldn't exist.
I'm just saying, why don't we? Why aren't we? Because the nation aren't. We do it, but nobody's patronizing. You know, I'm not going to say nobody, but our people don't, you know, they follow the crowd. They follow the masses. You know, they follow the wide road. They don't follow the straight and narrow.
I'm not sure what. We have to go old school, man, and start doing shit like they used to do when they used to.
But you're doing that shit right now. Even though this is a YouTube or this is a mainstream platform, you still saying straight and narrow content. If I'm putting out records like Legend in My Section or Positivity, and I got a new single coming out called Lord Take the Wheel with my Mexican La Raza community, it's that. That's back to the trunk. That's back to the grassroots. You know what I'm saying? You got to do it like we did it in the beginning, because these mainstream platforms ain't messing with us. We got to just hit the streets.
And I know I'm going to let you go in a minute, but the whole black and brown thing.
Yeah.
I get it, I guess, for like California. Because y'all growing up together, y'all intermingling, even though things that I hear don't be positive for the most part. A lot of us, like, I didn't know any Hispanic people growing up at all. I'm not a fan of the whole, like, Fat Joe saying nigga.
Right.
I cringe to this day. And his defense of saying it, it's so white supremacist that it bothers me.
Well, we kill each other more than blacks and Mexicans kill each other, and we say nigga more than any other race says nigga about us. So why aren't we cringing at ourselves?
Because I'm okay. I'm a hypocrite. I'm okay with us saying it
amongst ourselves. That's a hypocrite. Yeah, that's a hypocrite. So you don't.
Absolutely.
But I'm saying, so you have no you're not justified to complain.
Okay, but the black and brown unity, I don't know if that is that to our benefit.
Of course.
Is it working?
Yes, of course. That's our people. So black and brown, what we call it, what we think is brown is not brown. The Mexicans or Latinos or whatever, Hispanics, that is not the brown race. That is a member of the black race, the indigenous black nation, not race, the black nation. They're watered down from the native indigenous Indian, which is a black person. Mm-hmm. They just got straight. The real Indians got straight hair, thin nose, thin lips, you know, a little more tender skin, not as rough and dense as the African, the Afro-Negroid featured black people. Right. So the people of Africa is just one tribe of the black nation. There's 12 tribes, and they don't look alike. So the people of India, you know, the Indian people, yeah. they're black. We're black. The people are here in India. We're the only tribe that have the kinky hair and the wide nose and the thick lips. We're called the tribe of Shabazz. So tribe of Shabazz is what you call Africans.
Okay.
But we're not the only black member of the black nation. We're not the only black tribe. So the other majority of the other tribes have straight hair, have thin nose, thin lips. They're black. So okay. the Spaniards, the white Spaniard Europeans, which is pure Caucasians, they just speak Spanish. They came and conquered, the conquistador conquered the native indigenous or the Indian blacks, and they produced Mexicans and Puerto Ricans and all of that. And they forced Spanish on them, just like the white English ones did that to Africans and forced English on us. And now you still know that we kind of black because we got the tribe of Shabazz features. But if we didn't have these features, we would look just like them. We'd be able to pass as white.
Okay, and I'm all for that. I'm all with that. Problem with that is that they don't like us. And from what I've seen,
hold on, stop. We don't like us. We killing each other more than Mexicans and blacks is killing each other. So how can we fix our mouth to say they don't like us when we don't like us?
Let's say me and my brother fight every third Thursday. We go at it. Ham. But you live across the street and you punch my brother. We whooping your ass. Both of us. We might go back to fighting, but that's my brother to fight.
But that's ignorant and childish. That's tribalism. Because just because he live across the street, that's still your blood brother.
Right? But I'm not going to be friends with you if I know you don't like me.
Well, that's still, listen to the childishness of it. You talking about, okay. Listen. You talking about like you, right?
Uh-huh.
Black people not only don't we like each other, we hate each other, right? So how are you even gonna call somebody black your brother when you know most black people hate each other? But we wanna single out Mexicans or somebody, you know what I'm saying, when they ain't did nowhere near the damage to blacks that we done to each other.
Hey.
What have Mexicans or Latinos or Puerto Ricans done against blacks? Let's put it on a scale. Compared to what blacks do to each other every day, let's put it on a scale.
Okay, putting it on a scale is different.
Name some crimes.
When you put it on a scale, yeah, but that's no different than most crimes between white people. Well, most crimes committed towards white people are by other white people. It's proximity. It's who you live close to.
No, I'm just saying. Nah. So did Latinos or Mexicans burn crosses on our front yard? Did they lynch us, rape us, enslave us? Like, what did Mexicans or Latinos do?
Latinos ain't been. There's not been a concerted effort in certain neighborhoods out there in California where Latinos have physically, violently tried to make black people move.
It might have been, but what is that? Like, what is that?
That's a problem.
So out of that one little isolated needle in a haystack instance, we're gonna actually give that some kind of highlight as though that's moving something.
Okay.
Where did you even hear that from? Because the people that I lived in Compton, I lived in Watts, right? Mm-hmm. That didn't happen. Like, I grew up with Mexicans. That don't happen like that.
That's why I'm bringing it to you. Yeah, you would know way better than some article I read because you lived out there.
Let me let you in on this. One of the reasons why the Sereños or the Southsiders, you know what I'm saying, the Southern Mexicans even had to squad up like they do in the penitentiaries and now on the streets is because black people were so wild. We were so wild and disrespectful on the streets and in the penitentiaries, you know what I'm saying? And we were strong, but we was wild. We was mentally dead, no discipline, disrespectful. So when Mexicans was the minority, you know what I'm saying, we was giving their ass hell for no reason. So they had to squad up and get united and get militant and hold their ground against us because we was wild animals. We was wild animals. So it's a difference in the penitentiary. Like, you got the Muslims, you got the Nation of Islam Muslims, you got the Bilalian Muslims, but they, the Mexicans don't look at us the same as they look at the Bloods or the Crips or the, you know what I'm saying, or the BDs or GDs or, and stuff like that. What we're really talking about in California, because that don't, ain't even really that deep nowhere else.
Yeah.
But that's because of black people's own savagery, our own mental death, that if we don't love each other, we killing each other and we disrespecting each other. We know, you know, we, what we gonna do to somebody else. So that's all a reflection of how we was doing them. We was giving their ass hell.
Okay. Yeah.
And they squatted up and served it right back now. They more organized than black people. They army is more organized than we are. You say, huh?
Yeah, that can't argue with you, bro. Can't argue with that one at all. But go ahead.
No, I'm saying, but that was, you know, the example. I'm not gonna say that's an army that's protecting dirt, you know, dirty money though. That's kind of like a dirt army. That's really the army of God that got to get cleaned up and got to get whipped on by the real enemy so bad that we turn our focus in the right direction. Like we did in 92 with the gang truce and all of that. But the Million Man March was the demonstration of our standing army. So if you can get all these people that was from all these different hoods, blood, crip, GD, BD, everything, from all over the United States to agree that this is what we want to do, that was the landmark demonstration right there. Satan knew exactly what that meant.
Now that you put it that way, I can agree with that.
So that's organization.
And definitely everybody is organization.
Was, and we was ready to die and do the other thing, the opposite of that. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I got you. Yo, man. Yo, this has been a beautiful conversation, bro.
Man, my pleasure, Big Job. I love your questions. I love, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, Glasses was right, man. I definitely thoroughly enjoyed this. We definitely got to get you. Matter of fact, I want to get you and Glasses.
And
really have a discussion. But if there's anything possible, man, when you drop something, tag me so I can repost it, man. Whatever you need, I got you, bro. Pen game just still... just nasty. And I'm sorry, man. You get older, man. Things slow down. You know, you ain't as sharp as you used to be, except for you. Like, your shit.
I'm just an example. I'm telling you, this is a commercial for the Brotherhood, for the information, which is your information, which is the Nation of Islam and not a religion. Islam just means the natural nature of the original people, which is peace and submission to truth. So anything that you hear from me or see from me, whether it's pen game, music, or conversation, any potent thing that you see value in, I got it from this teaching. I got it from the teachings of the Nation of Islam under Minister Farrakhan. So you don't have to be a Muslim. You don't have to call yourself a Muslim, but come drink from this same information. Drink from the same water fountain that we drinking from. You see how it's benefiting us. You ain't gotta call yourself no Muslim, but shit, man, this is your nation. This is your information. This is the knowledge of you. I'm benefiting from your knowledge if you ain't gonna benefit from. I'll use it. Shit.
I can definitely use some color. Right. Yo, man. I just wanna say, man, I wanna thank you, man. Is there anything you wanna say to the people, how they get in touch with you? Anything of that nature?
West Coast Cam at everything on social media, West Coast Cam, and what else? Go to westcoastcam.com, my website, westcoastcam.com, and I got a sale right now that's about to go off on ionic colloidal silver. If y'all don't know what colloidal silver is, it's one of the strongest natural antiviral, antibiotic, antimicrobial, antifungal, you know, element of nature of God, which is silver, pure silver, but it's an ionic colloidal form, a liquid form where you can drink it or you can put it, disinfect your countertops or whatever, but I drink it. Me and my family drink it. We never took no Dr. Fauci juice shots or none of that, you know. And we've been healthy. This is one of the things that keep us from not having to go to the doctor. This, I'm speaking for us. I'm not making no medical claims. I'm not a medical professional. I don't give medical advice. You know what I'm saying? I'm just a researcher, and this has worked for me and my family for the last 12, 13 years. So you can go on my website, westcoastcam.com, and try it for yourself and read up on it, because I got some peer-reviewed published information on there, so you don't think it's just my snake oil pitch. But other than
whatever,
that,
man. You ain't got no snake oil pitch, man. We not even going to put that out in the atmosphere. Stop it.
I ain't worried. Shit, I'm not worried.
I just want to say thank you, bro, for your knowledge, your wisdom, and your time, bro. It's been an honor.
Man, my pleasure, my honor. Until next time, let me know I'm there.
No doubt. I got you, bro.
All right, bro.
Peace.
Peace.
Yo, I'm a little speechless on that one, man. I've been wanting to chop it up with Cam for a long, long time. Again, man, shout out to Glasses for the plug. And I'm hoping that this audio is somewhat decent to play back. People saying they can hear it okay. I'm hoping it was just my shitty equipment over here. I really got to work on this. Matter of fact, maybe I think that's what I'll ask for Christmas. Some new shit. Anyway, we got Be Legit coming up Wednesday. We got my brother Timothy Sumter coming up Thursday, and Q from the William Home Clothing, and I hope I'm pronouncing the clothing right. Definitely, man. Really an honor to have the brother on. Appreciate you, Teresa. And salute to you, Ruben Muhammad, man. Yo, I don't think the planet can possibly thank you enough for the greatness that is you. And for what you have done for Cam, for hip hop, and for black folks in general. On that note, man, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Yo, man, the last few months, man, and I got to give my manager Rita credit. The last few months have been some of the best months as far as the show's productivity, as far as the growth that I've have had since I've started doing this. So shout out to you, Rita. Appreciate y'all. Y'all have a good one. I'm out.